We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me from away, still way over there in Southern California, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Ty, I'm terrific. And I like painting pictures for not just you, but for everybody listening, because this is not a visual medium. So I have to do so with my words. And as I record this in the makeshift cloffice, which is an actual closet, not a walk-in closet like I have back east. But as I record this in the makeshift cloffice, there is a bar from which clothes normally hang. And I use it to brace myself just so I have balance as I record, because the microphone is on top of a dresser and I have some pillows strewn around here to sort of calm everything down sound-wise. But I hold on to this because the takes that I am about to put forth into the college football universe about mid-aughts very good teams, Ty, I don't want to launch myself backwards. I'm just ready to roll.
It sounds a little bit like you're going over the top style. You've seen that movie with Sly Stallone, right?
Of course.
The little contraption in the big rig with him as he's going, and he just works out with that right arm the whole time.
Ty, I'm not touching that in the way that a lot of people are going to be saying that's what she said, but I'm just going to tell you, you're not wrong. You are absolutely not wrong. And I came up with the concept for this show a mere 24 hours ago.
Yeah, as this is not as something we've all long great planned. Ideas on the Solid Verbal. This came up last night, I believe.
But there is something about re-educating oneself through reading, watching tape, and thinking things over with a 2020 brain as you watch mid-aughts college football that I think is illuminating. I think it's refreshing, and I think gives at least me, I can't speak for you, a new perspective as we start our three-part First Place Losers series.
First Place Losers. So we're going to get into that in a second. Dan can explain exactly what this concept entails. But hello, I'm Ty. He's Dan. We are The Solid Verbal. We're a year-round college football podcast. We still don't know exactly when we're going to get or if we're going to get college football in 2020. We are certainly hoping for that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We shall see, though. In the meantime, thank you so much for joining us. We will be with you all off-season long for however long that off-season lasts. If you do like the show, don't forget to subscribe out there on Spotify, out there on Apple or Google, wherever you get your shows, you can find ours. There is also a subreddit started and maintained by our good friend Peter. Just go to solidverbal.com. www.reddit.com. And if you don't already follow us on social media, you can do so on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram. Also, the YouTube channel is up and running now because we've been doing these nightly trivia streams, these nightly just, I don't know, friend streams, I guess, is probably the worst way to categorize it. But Dan and I just like to connect up and do some video and talk to the masses. So we've been doing that every night at around 5 p.m. Eastern time. So if you want more of the show, that is certainly another avenue for you to pursue, Dan.
It absolutely is. I'm ready to get into first place losers. Are you?
So explain this to me again, so I am clear, being so I am one half of this show.
So there is the idiom, of course, people know that second place is just first place loser, right? That second place is never going to be good enough. You should never be proud of a silver medal. Almost receiving the bronze, is there's somewhat more dignity than having the opportunity to win gold and coming up just short. I wanted to go back to before we actually started doing the Solid Verbal, but not too far back. So we are starting with the 2005 season. So it would be the 2006 National Championship. So we have second place teams of the last 15 years. We're doing the first 5 years today. And the goal is to both honor and see how close that first place loser came to just finishing the season in first place. Because the champions, they're the ones that get the parades. They're the ones that get the DVDs. They're the ones that get honored at halftime of various games, and that they're the immortal ones. And so just short of immortality is a May podcast episode dedicated to your success, which I believe, as somebody who is arguably the most experienced first place loser in rooting for the Oregon Ducks, who have lost two national championships in the last 15 years, you've watched your team lose one national championship and, it should be noted, one playoff game in spectacular fashion.
Correct. Correct.
I feel like this is squarely within our wheelhouse to honor teams who either came up just short or well short when given the opportunity to win the national championship, and sort of talk about the context, talk about the season at large, and just how close they actually came to winning. Because as you know, as a Notre Dame fan, the heartbreaking losses stay with you longer than the wonderful wins, right?
I think that's right.
You're a competitive guy.
A little bit, yeah, you could say that. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
No, that kick, the Boston College kick, still haunts me. I talked about it previously on one of our shows, but that still haunts me, that kick. And, you know, I'd imagine if you're an Alabama fan listening, the kick six is something that resonates still in a very emotional fashion. Fans of all teams kind of find themselves in that category. And first place losers, I think, gets to that a little bit. Some of the games that I think we're going to go through certainly have that heartbreaking ending for some fan bases. Mm-hmm. Others do not. Others do not have that at all. So we'll really run the gamut here on some of these teams that essentially finished second place, how their season ended, and in what fashion it did that left them kind of on the outside looking in, not holding that trophy on the podium with one Bill Hancock. But we can get into that here. What is the structure of this? So we're starting with the 2005 regular season in USC.
Yes, we're starting with 2005 USC, and we're not going to belabor 2005 USC too much because we actually did just talk about them with Yogi Roth, looking back at the Bush push game. So we're going to look back at why they got to the championship game, like what got them there, and then why they lost and could they have won. Those, I think those are the three pillows
right,
that you can rest your head on for each of these teams. And I'm going to go through this really quickly with 2005 USC. You know, Pete Carroll was the head coach and the defensive coordinator. Lane Kiffin was running the offense. They have the close game against Notre Dame. They have the comeback against ASU. They run through the Pac-10 otherwise. They murder Oregon and UCLA. And everybody knows it's Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Lendale White. They end up against Texas. The defense, this is something that was at least new again for me. And I don't know how much you remember about the 2005 USC defense, but they didn't really stack the depth chart, whatever.
No,
with blue chip talent leading up to the Texas game. It was actually the year of the Texas game, 2005. There were freshmen that came in that were pretty highly touted on defense. But anybody who watched, especially the back end of that USC defense, try to tackle Vince Young knows that this was not an electric, hard-hitting, fundamentally sound open field tackling team.
No, it wasn't. And, you know, that's been a thing for USC for quite some time, to be honest. But this, again, just to provide some context, was a very good USC team. Obviously, they made the Rose Bowl. This was the season that led up to that famed 2006 Rose Bowl game that they lost to Texas and Vince Young 41-38, one of the greatest games ever played by many accounts. But let me ask you this. What was USC's official record in the 05-06 season? Do you know?
Well, the librarian in you is probably going to say, like, whatever the sanctions dictate the record was. But it was 12-0 during the regular season, 12-1 overall.
The official record books, I believe, classify it as 0-0 because of the vacation of wins. Now, there is some debate over whether or not the loss still counts. So depending on your perspective, it's either 0-0 or 0-1. But that was one of the seasons that was supposedly wiped out due to the NCAA swooping in, being the white knights that they are, and cracking down after the Reggie Bush stuff. So lo and behold, we get to the Rose Bowl. You know, a lot of this stuff is a formality and an administrative type stuff, but one of the greatest games I've ever seen played. As you said, we talked about this USC team in a previous show, being so we recapped the Bush push. The talent on this team, though, from an offensive standpoint, was pretty incredible. And again, we won't replay the show that we did before, but there was a lot of firepower on this offense. Matt Leinart, we had Reggie Bush, we had Lendale White, we had a really good receiving core. Specifically with this game, though, this national championship game, you mentioned it to me last night, and I did have a chance to go back and scrub through it again today. They had so many chances to win this damn game. You know, it's going to go down in history as an amazing individual effort by Vince Young, a record-setting performance, but even he gave USC a bunch of chances to win this game, and they could not take advantage of it. USC in 2005-2006 is going to go down as one of the better teams, certainly in this generation of college football. Unfortunately for them, second place, they lost to Texas in this game, but they did have their chances.
Should point out, they were the defending national champion, and USC and Texas went wire to wire as 1-2 before flipping at 2-2 becomes 1 and 1 becomes 2 once Texas wins this game. And obviously the answer is yes, USC had many chances to put away this game, but great teams close, Ty. And that's what Texas was. That's what Vince Young was, a great closer. But here's what struck me watching back this game, because we all just sort of remember Vince Young running into the corner of the end zone and the confetti and everything like that. Again, rightfully so, a superhuman effort. Texas does zero in the first quarter. They come out sloppy and undisciplined. They probably would have lost one of their starting safeties to targeting if it were 2020. It wasn't even like a close, was he? He tried to decapitate a fullback. Cedric Griffin did on a wheel route and almost did. Also, three Texas fumbles in the first 17 minutes, including another one in the fourth quarter. So amazing fumble luck, which great. It's good to have fumble luck. Vince Young does not get called down at the USC 10-yard line before he pitches it for a Texas touchdown for them to go up, I believe, 9-7 early. And there's a play that I had completely forgotten about. USC's up 12 with 5.5 or so minutes left. Vince Young rolls out to the left, is in the midst of being sacked, throws the ball away from his body, like 30 yards across the field, straight up into double coverage. And one of the Ting brothers, instead of coming down with the game-sealing interception, simply swatted it away. And Vince Young, a couple of plays later, I think 90 seconds later, runs it in to cut it to a one-score game. That would have iced the game. So from, I don't know if we're using a scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 2002 Miami, whatever we want to call it, USC 1,000% had the chance to win this game,
yeah,
which I assume makes things all the more painful.
So what I think would be fun to do is, as we're going through, maybe like war style, we can compare 2005 USC to our next team, which would be 2006 Ohio State.
Oh, I like this.
You know, like which team's better. Like, I think I already know which team's better, but we can get into 2006 US or 2006 Ohio State, excuse me, if you're ready for that, if you're okay with that.
I am ready for that. And the comparison is not terribly difficult. We have two Heisman quarterbacks, Troy Smith for Ohio State and Matt Leinart, wins it a couple years before. And only one of the teams beats Texas on their way to the national championship, at least appearance. And that is not USC, but rather Ohio State. They beat Texas 24-7 early on in the season. They, of course, have that tight, tight shootout against Michigan, 42-39, that left some people, because they were 1-2 in the country, saying, should there be a rematch in the national championship game? The answer is no, Ty. The answer is no. What do you remember about 2006 Ohio State, if anything? Because I have some notes.
Well, so first off, again, context. This is an Ohio State team that finished 12-1 after the season. They got smoked by Florida in the BCS game, 41-14. But this, what's important to note about Ohio State is that this was right when the program was hitting critical mass and firing up the engines that are, in effect, still running 15 years later. You know, they won the 2003 Fiesta Bowl. They knocked off Miami. We talked about that game previously. They had a really good run in between then and where we're at now, which is when they got back to the BCS championship game. This was the number one team in the country all year long until they lost that BCS game. And they had a really good defense that was sort of a hallmark of this era of Ohio State. Maybe not quite as good as they were the following year, which we'll get into, but a really good defense that had high level talent. Vernon Golston got drafted, I want to say sixth overall, maybe by the Jets. Along that defensive front, James Laurinaitis, who of course had a really good year, Malcolm Jenkins, who went on to have a really good NFL career. Troy Smith, you mentioned, won the Heisman, the school's seventh Heisman Trophy winner. So there were some headliners on this team. And I just remember the one prevailing thought I had thinking back and certainly living through the era was, I always had a hard time trying to project Troy Smith forward. You know, like, is this guy going to actually play in the NFL? I always had a hard time with that, especially with quarterbacks that won the Heisman Trophy, because a lot of them, as you know, don't pan out. But Troy Smith, to me, it just, I don't know why he gave me a hard time trying to figure that out. Obviously, he didn't pan out as a long-lasting NFL quantity. Certainly in the college ranks, though, and within that system, he was very good. And Ohio State went on to build on its success the next season, the year after, all the way up to where we're at today. So these were kind of the early workings of this juggernaut that has become the Ohio State Buckeyes.
So Troy Smith is a very fun watch, not as much of a dual threat as he was the year before. He runs a lot more in 2005, and I don't know if that's cut back in 2006 because of wanting to prove himself under center more, because it wasn't a full spread. Ohio State did, they spread the field. They had good receivers led by Ted Ginn. And also worth remembering, I think Troy Smith was very foolishly, he was suspended over like accepting $500 the year before. And sat out a game. I think it was their bowl game, but I don't remember. I should have done more research into something that silly. But it's Jim Bowman, who is not a spread offensive coordinator, running the offense for Ohio State. And you're right. It is the defense that is leading the way. But Troy Smith is awesome. But if you watch some of their bigger games, it's a lot of quick stuff. It's not a ton downfield. It's not a ton of creativity. It's not a ton of, you know, a dynamic look on offense from Ohio State. And that's fine. It worked amazingly well. They run the table at number one throughout the regular season. And of course, the Big Ten doesn't have a championship game until 2011. So they don't have to play in that to sort of jump that hurdle before the national championship game. They have the close call against Illinois, but it's really more of an offensive struggle. The defense was still amazing against the Illini, at least this year. We'll get to something about Illinois later on about Ohio State. But it was a good team. Ultimately, though, the problem with Ohio State was their tackles. They get to the national championship game against Florida. And mind you, and I have the 2006 BCS, Ohio State and Michigan in the back half of the season, they're 1-2 from week 7 until they play in week 12. Auburn's up there early on. Notre Dame's up there early on. Texas early on until Ohio State beats them. And then as we get into the national championship game, Florida edges out Michigan, thankfully, to reach that game. We have LSU, Louisville, even later on in the season, Rutgers and Arkansas are in the top 10. Wake is a top 15 team. Things were weird, Ty, in 2006. But we get to this championship game early on in Urban Meyer's career against an Ohio State team who had won a national championship in 2002, but couldn't quite get back on that level until this would be early 2007, but the 2006 season. And the offensive tackles, one of whom was an NFL player for some time, Alex Boone for Ohio State, but he kicked inside as a guard once he was in the NFL. They were beaten mercilessly by Jarvis Moss and Derek Harvey, just hounding Troy Smith, who proved himself to be, and this is a term that I am going to try to employ just because I'm stealing it from Draymond Green, who talks about it in the context of NBA players. A lot of players play well in the fall. The best are winter wonders, Ty. Really perform.
This is
in
your
January.
New thing, right?
This is my new thing. I because when we look across these teams and these national championships, it's very clear that the team with the most winter wonders, who step up their game with all the time off, with the other team getting a whole season's worth of film to prepare for, everything that goes into a national championship game, Ohio State, especially on offense, had essentially no winter wonders. And that's early Beanie Wells in the backfield, but not starting. He's behind Antonio Pittman. And Ted Ginn runs back the opening kick for a touchdown and tweaks his foot and is out the rest of the game, his foot and ankle. And so the dudes on this Ohio State offense just don't exist, as Troy Smith looked to be a Heisman dude, but could not make anything. It was just heads or tails, whatever.
It was a rough game. Rough game for him in that title game. They were overwhelmed by a Florida defensive line that had him on the run. I think he completed, what, 4 passes the entire game. So it was clearly not a Heisman-level effort from him, and Florida went on to a pretty big victory. Interesting side note here, for those of you that follow all college sports, Florida went on to beat Ohio State in the 2007 NCAA men's basketball championship game as well.
Correct.
The first time in NCAA history that the same two schools played for both the football and basketball championships in the same year, and the first time that a school held both the football and basketball championships in the same academic and calendar year as well. So a little bit of history, a little bit of a random factoid that may only interest Ty and Dan, but 2006 Ohio State, a runner-up, how do they compare to 2006 or 2005 USC, in your view?
I think USC is stronger, and it's mostly because of the sheer number of winter wonders and dudes on that USC offense. And as good as the Ohio State defense was, at a certain point, the speed of Florida, and it's a freshman year Percy Harvin, and it's Chris Leak, who's fine. Florida is simply just fine overall with unblockable defensive ends. That was the clear difference in this game. They just did not allow Ohio State to do a single thing on offense. And so it's not as if this very early Urban Meyer Florida team was overwhelming offensively, but the team speed for Florida on offense, and then similarly the team speed between Reggie Bush and whatever, Dwayne Jarrett, Dominique Bird, these guys on the USC team, I would have them, not just because they were closer to Texas, Ohio State was not close to beating Florida. Not a conversation.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
So that means it's 2005 USC against our next runner-up, 2007 Ohio State. Ohio State runners-up 2 years consecutively. And 2007, as a college football entity, maybe the wackiest season we have seen, Dan. This was right around the time where you and I were emailing for the first time, right? Trying to figure out what we're going to do, if we're going to do a podcast, just kind of getting to know each other as friends. Meanwhile, in the college football world, we had teams like Cal, like South Florida, Boston College, West Virginia, even Kansas, all reaching number two in the AP polls. We had teams like Notre Dame, Miami, and Nebraska clearly not having their best seasons. Combined, those three teams went a collective 13-23. And perhaps the strangest thing of all was the fact that LSU won the BCS National Championship with, yes, you guessed it, two losses, Dan.
Yeah, this is the easiest case for most interesting year of the first place losers we're reviewing. And it's, I mean, the case is simple. There was chaos this year, and Ohio State was the clear beneficiary. They sort of hung around. LSU popped up at the end, but we have that wacky. Do you know who was slated to be in the national championship as of November 25th's BCS rankings?
West Virginia?
West Virginia, as you know, they lose the backyard brawl to Pitt. I think it's 13-9, but it's Mizzou. Mizzou's coming off of the win over Kansas. They then get stomped by Oklahoma. I figure personally into all of this because I was at Oklahoma's upset loss at Colorado. I watched the South Florida Pitt upset the night before, I believe. It was a Friday night. I watched that from a bar in Boulder. And that next day was also when Cal upset Oregon, and there was chaos there. And then we finally get to the end of the season in the 2007 season. LSU makes the jump from 5-2, thanks to Ryan Perilou, not intentionally rhyming there, but I'm happy it did. Matt Flynn is out for the SEC championship game. Ryan Perilou steps in, is good. LSU beats Tennessee. I think Eric Ainge throws a couple picks in the fourth quarter. And Ohio State is the beneficiary of the best defense of their modern era, right? I think it's 0.86 points per drive allowed. They hold Michigan from 39 the year before to 3 in 2007. So the Ohio State defense leads the way. They get LSU, and this is just a stroke of bad luck, in New Orleans, Ty. They get LSU in New Orleans. It looks like it's going to be a good game, and then it just sort of isn't. And that's great for LSU fans, not so great for Ohio State fans. But what do you remember? What do you treasure about 2007 itself for the Buckeyes?
This was 2 years in a row, again, where they were runners up. And this really was, like I said in the previous blurb about 06 Ohio State, this is right around the time where this program is getting annoyingly good. And they're there, and I say that lovingly, but annoyingly good. They're in it every year. And I remember Ohio State being very good on defense. But I also remember the fact that Todd Beckman sort of came out of nowhere, was this no name compared to Troy Smith, who had won the Heisman the previous year. And it didn't dawn on me until I went back and looked and did the research, but he was a big kid. He was 6'5", 243. That's a big freaking dude. And he was fine as quarterback. You know, he didn't give him much in the way of athleticism, but he got the ball where it needed to go. He was an effective game manager, and they had so much talent around him
that they were able to piggyback off all that and find their way back into the BCS title game. So I certainly remember what Jim Tressel built in 06 and then built upon in 2007. Honestly, my lasting impression of this Ohio State team might have been the loss to Illinois, because I remember at the time this was such a big deal that they lost to Illinois. If it were to happen today, in our little world, that would classify as a letdown look-ahead sandwich, because they had come off a win over number 19 Wisconsin. They were at home against Illinois, where they lost, I think, 28-21, something like that. And then the very next week, played against Michigan and I think won something like 14-3. So right in between, in that real like soft underbelly, is where Illinois showed up at the Horseshoe, knocked them off, gave them their first loss of the year, and through some fortune the rest of the way, as we said, a crazy year, they were able to weasel their way into that BCS title game.
Wow, weasel their way in, Ty. Damn, this was a team that was a number one BCS team a good chunk of this season.
Most of the season, they were. So yeah, I remember the loss to Illinois. Illinois, of course, went on to play in the Rose Bowl and get boat raced by USC.
Whatever.
And I do remember certainly the controversy around them getting in that BCS game. They did lose. It was essentially a home game for LSU, 38-24. And this is a game that we talked about not all that long ago, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, towards the end of the season, obviously mentioning the topsy-turvy nature of 2007 and having all sorts of teams at number two, Ohio State, they just hang around. They go, I think they start 10-0 before losing to Illinois. They're replacing a lot on their defensive line. But this, I mean, soft underbelly, a term you like using, Ty, the Big Ten and especially Ohio State's non-conference schedule, let's not pretend like they were prepared, this year's team, especially up front on defense, for a team as talented as LSU. This was not it was a god-awful Minnesota team, by the way. They don't play anybody in the non-conference part of the schedule. This is Anthony Morelli, Penn State. I know you have your own thoughts about that era of Nittany Lion football. Wisconsin's fine, but they're not what they are now. They were ranked at the time that Ohio State beats them. So Ohio State replaces, I think, three starters up front on the line other than Vernon Golston, but they return the linebacking core in the secondary. So they're in great shape defensively. Cameron Hayward, who I'm sure a lot of people now know his name, both from his Ohio State career and his NFL career, he's a freshman. Becomes a freshman All-American and an All-Big Ten player. He's terrific for them up front. And so they really get to this amazing place defensively. But with your focus on Todd Beckman comes the fact that there's no Ted Ginn. Antonio Pittman, who was a big deal, big play guy in the backfield for Ohio State, he's gone. So we have Beanie Wells, Mo Wells. You have apparently Brian Rabisky and Brian Hartline are two different people. I don't know
really?
If you have the breaking news sound.
Wow.
They are, in fact, two different people. And Brian Rabisky drops what should have been a touchdown catch, so no fault of Todd Beckman against LSU. Brian Hartline is fine, but if he's your second best receiver, I'm not sure what you're going to be able to do against a pretty good, if not really good, LSU defense, especially up front. It's Tyson Jackson and Ricky Jean-Francois and Glenn Dorsey. So they didn't have the horses, Ty. They didn't have the winter wonders, as I like to call it. Some guys are good in the fall. You need the guys who are good in January. On offense, Ohio State, outside of, I guess, Beanie Wells, they just didn't have that guy.
Didn't have that guy. Who was on
Didn't have that guy at a number of positions.
Who was on that LSU team?
So Ali Highsmith is in the linebacking core. He was obviously terrific. The secondary was fine. We're not talking, you know, Honey Badger or Patrick Peterson, you know, the guys that, you know, this year, obviously, Derek Stingley. I don't think anybody on that specific talent level, but there's speed, there's aggression. And when Ohio State is playing a short game, when they're just looking for 7-yard outs and they're just looking to run the ball between the tackles, how much do you really need from your secondary if they're able to cheat and blitz and crowd the line? And LSU took advantage.
Wow, they had Trindon Holiday on this team. They had...
On offense, yeah.
Brandon LaFell.
Sure. Early Doucette, I believe.
Early Doucette, yeah. Jacob Hester.
Mm-hmm. He got what he wanted.
Yeah, a lot of these guys went on to play in the league. But I don't know if... I think as we saw it crystallize over the next decade or so,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't always clear that LSU knew how to use guys like that. They got the most they could out of Jacob Hester, but guys like Brendan LaFell and some others, obviously in their current system, might have profited a little bit more on the stats side. But nonetheless, they win the national championship. The final was 38-24. Going back to the team by team deathmatch here, we've got 2005 USC against 2007 Ohio State. I still think I got to go 2005 USC here.
Yeah, I don't think firepower wise Ohio State on offense has that much to keep up, even though I think the defense would do a really nice job against USC's more deliberate offense. I'm going to go with quarterback. I'm going to go with, you know, the game changer, probably the best open field player ever in Reggie Bush.
Yeah.
So if Jacob Hester was able to get his against this Ohio State defense, I imagine Reggie Bush and Lendell White would have been fine. So I'm going to roll with USC here. And Ohio State, just they didn't put it together. Trestle ball was never going to be an offense. It was never going to field an offense that could compete with the speed of some of the nation's best until Urban Meyer got rid of trestle ball and did his own thing.
So we now go to 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where, for me, it gets interesting.
Okay.
2008 is Oklahoma.
This was a hell of a year.
It was a hell of a year. 2008. Now, we talked a little bit about this era on a previous show.
Yeah.
But here is the context. Oklahoma goes 12-1 in the 2008 season. They lost, I think, 45-35, something like that, in the Red River Shootout to Texas. That's always mid-October, right?
Mm-hmm.
Run the table the rest of the way. They eventually qualify for the BCS National Championship against the Florida Gators. It was interesting on a number of different fronts, not the least of which was it obviously being a national championship game. But one of the big other headliners here was the fact that it was two Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks going against one another. This is only the second time it had happened. It happened a few years prior with Matt Leinart against Jason White. But Sam Bradford as a redshirt sophomore against Tim Tebow was quite the top billing here. It was a hell of a year for Sam Bradford. So you'll remember we talked about the Oklahoma game and the national championship with Paul Thompson and how that was a disaster. Well, sure. Sam Bradford in that old clip is sort of wandering the sidelines, youthful, looking innocent. No idea what he's about to become in Oklahoma lore. Sam Bradford won the job the next year, and in 2008, ends up throwing 50 touchdown passes and winning the Heisman.
Feels good.
Yeah. The offense at Oklahoma was incredibly dynamic. Over 50 points a game on average. They were beating teams by about 4 touchdowns at a pop. 60 points or more in 5 straight games to close out the year. So this was a team that was humming. They were firing on all cylinders going into the postseason. There was some talent on that team. There was some real talent on that team. DeMarco Murray, who actually was at Oklahoma 5 years. I didn't realize that until I went back and looked, but took a red shirt and then played out his eligibility in totality. He didn't play in the BCS game because he hurt his hamstring. But he was on that team. Trent Williams was on the offensive line. There's a whole slew of other folks on the offensive side that are of interest and certainly household notable names for college football fans. On the defensive side, Oklahoma was, we're not going to pretend that this was a shutdown defense. It was anything but. That said,
they were fine.
And they had Gerald McCoy. Gerald McCoy, who went on to be a really high draft pick, was an All-American a couple times over, was like a 6-time All-Pro. I don't even know if he's still playing, but he clearly was a dude. And it was funny, when you were watching back parts of this game, you were texting me last night or this morning, basically saying like, man, Gerald McCoy, he just couldn't do it all, could he? Oh, wait, he just got an interception off of Tim Tebow dropping back into coverage.
Yeah.
No, so there were some real dudes on this Oklahoma team. And, you know, we could talk about the dudes that were across from them on the Florida side, but this game here definitely had that feel of SEC dominance really coming to the mainstream. It also had the feel of like the early makings of the Big Game Bob moniker. There were a lot of things that I think started with this game or were kind of like intensified by this game.
You go back a couple of years. So this is, I think, year three of Kevin Wilson as the offensive coordinator, this iteration with OU. You know, he does great things for Northwestern at the turn of the century. And look, the Paul Thompson Boise State experience was very entertaining, but we got to see what an Oklahoma offense looked like with somebody better suited to run it. And Sam Bradford, especially after they lose to Texas, was a man possessed and rightfully won the Heisman. Interestingly, there was a Big 12. The Big 12 was the center of college football probably this year, right? With the three-way tie in the South between Texas, Texas Tech, and Oklahoma. Of course, Oklahoma just murders Texas Tech late. I think they dropped 66 on the number two team in the country. They lose to Texas, and of course, Texas famously loses to Texas Tech on the Michael Crabtree play at the end of the game in Lubbock. So we have a three-way tie. They go to the fifth tiebreaker to determine that Oklahoma is indeed the team that should be going to the Big 12 championship game. They end up storming back and beating Mizzou to get to this game. And you're right. I think you're underselling the defense a little just because of how quickly the offense played. And that sort of left Brent Venables probably scrambling a bit to rotate in guys and keep guys fresh, because Gerald McCoy couldn't literally be everywhere. As great as he was, Travis Lewis was very good behind him. The secondary took some lumps against some very good Big 12 quarterbacks. But the Oklahoma defense, especially, it got much better next year when Venables got used to things a little bit more. They were fine. They were good enough to get them to the BCS National Championship, and they were a great story. They had the speed. They had the talent on offense, like you mentioned. Jermaine Gresham was just fantastic all season long and gave them a really difficult matchup element for essentially everybody, including Florida. He was probably the most successful offensive player in that game in terms of getting open and affecting the game. It was an amazing Oklahoma team to watch. They weren't fully the modern spread. Sam Bradford was under center a good deal, but they would get the ball quickly to playmakers in space, as people like to say, and guys like Chris Brown and DeMarco Murray and Joaquin Iglesias, a young Ryan Broyles. They just tormented everybody, and they did it quickly. They did it with pace. They did it without huddling. It was, you can't tell, and I know our pal Bill Connolly just wrote all about this, but you can't tell the story of the modern spread without the utter destruction laid at the feet of the Big 12 by Oklahoma. And so when they get to Florida, you think to yourself, well, both these teams are fast. Both these teams are talented. Both these teams have All-Americans. We've got a Heisman winner. We've got this battering ram in Tim Tebow and the speed of Percy Harvin and this absurd secondary. What's going to come of it? And it was just a fast game. It kind of lived up to the billing. Ultimately, though, and I'm sure you have thoughts here too, it was Florida's general speed on defense, winning moments. It was 7-all going into halftime because Sam Bradford throws a pick at the goal line. And just the resilience of, I guess, Florida's rushing game. Just they're battering Oklahoma down the field with Tim Tebow and Percy Harvin. And, you know, whether it's Jeff Demps or Chris Haney, it's just it's play after play after play. And it just wore Oklahoma down.
Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma was not themselves. They were not. And I don't know if it's because DeMarco Murray wasn't out there on the field, but they were a shell of their former self in the rushing department. Whereas yeah. Florida had a number of options. Tebow was, of course, the headliner that year. But You mentioned Chris Rainey, Jeff Demps, even Percy Harvin got some acting. Emmanuel Moody was on that team.
Yeah, from SC. Yeah.
So they had a number of guys, and it was just so interesting the way that Urban Meyer constructed that team. Because it just those three names, Rainey, Demps, and Harvin, all of them were incredibly fast and could be used a variety of different ways. It extends into the receiving game, too. Percy Harvin, so many different ways that you could play him if you wanted to put him out wide or in the slot or out of the backfield. Mm-hmm. He was a matchup disadvantage. Lewis Murphy was on that team, sort of underrated, but got a lot of action. And Aaron Hernandez, You know, we'll take all the bad stuff aside, but Aaron Hernandez was a big time matchup disadvantage for defenses. So much versatility on that offense that it was very difficult to defend. And as we said at the top of this blurb about 08 Oklahoma, the defense is fine. We're not here to disparage the defense, but it was certainly not their specialty. They did a good job in this game. We did a good job keeping it close in this game. And truly, if not for like two possessions that went haywire, they could have won this game.
Yeah, and Tim Tebow was really good on the ground. He has a jump pass at the goal line, which works out well. But he was okay through the air. He wasn't bad, but he didn't lead the way with his passing. I know people are shocked knowing that he's a Hall of Fame passer now and setting all sorts of NFL records. His picks were not good. His interceptions were not good. He was hesitant, but when you were built like he was and Oklahoma just doesn't have the depth of talent, it's an immovable force versus what's the phrase, Ty? I'm very tired now, but
an unstoppable force against an immovable object.
Yeah, so you have the Gerald McCoy led front, but at a certain point they just wore down the Oklahoma front, and I came away very impressed overall with Oklahoma's 2008. Again, the mere fact that we have a three-way tie, and by the way, Texas, Texas Tech, and Oklahoma were all presented with Big 12 South trophies, which is sort of absurd that such a trophy exists, but they're all presented with it, and we get this championship game, which I think is what everybody wanted after Sam Bradford wins the Heisman, maybe outside of Austin and Lubbock, but Alabama comes relatively close, right? Alabama goes, I think they're undefeated. They go 12-0 into the SEC championship game. And Tim Tebow actually has an awesome game in Atlanta against John Parker Wilson, Glenn Coffey, a young Julio Jones, not what Alabama, what they would become. Those were not winter wonders, I would say, Glenn Coffey and John Parker Wilson. But would they have been enough to beat Oklahoma? Perhaps. But they definitely were not enough to beat Utah, who actually finished number two in the final BCS standings, going 13-0, beating Alabama in the Sugar Bowl.
I am inclined to go 08 Oklahoma over
at 05 SC?
Over 05 SC.
So the case, I think, is pretty easy for Oklahoma. I don't think it's an easy game, but if you were going to exploit USC's weakness that year, it's probably their corners. And while, you know, it's not clear that Joaquin Iglesias and a young Ryan Broyles are killers on the outside, that offense is pretty perfectly suited to take down SC. So I could see that for sure.
I think I'm going to go 08 Oklahoma. I'm going to do it. It goes against better judgment. And I just loved those two SC teams in 04 and 05. But
could they have beaten Florida?
Man, Florida was loaded.
Florida was loaded. I think, how many times out of 10, how many times out of 100, if this game is simulated in Elon Musk's simulation, how many times does Oklahoma beat Florida on a neutral field with, by the way, Tom Brenneman, I think three straight national championships with Tom Brenneman calling all 100 simulations?
Well, in simulations, they could win 40% of the games. I don't know.
40%? Okay. I don't think it's that high. I think I could not believe the Florida secondary was what it was that night. Janoris Jenkins, Joe Hayden, Ahmad Black, and Major Wright. That's serious. That is very, very serious. And I don't think Oklahoma, if you play this game over and over again, especially without DeMarco Murray as just an option leaking out of the backfield for over four quarters.
But what about SC?
I think Florida's in a better position to win that game because of their speed on defense. I don't love their defensive line, but I think it's Brandon Spikes and Brandon Hicks at linebacker along with that secondary. And Tim Tebow, if we're talking about a physically imposing quarterback with the ability to inflict damage with his legs, we know USC didn't do well against that specific prescription. So I'm going to say Florida here.
Okay. All right.
You agree? Disagree? How many E's?
No, I agree with you.
Okay.
Wholeheartedly. How do you feel about the Oklahoma versus SC thing?
I like Oklahoma. I mean, I think it's sort of a 50-50 toss-up situation because I don't know how they cover Dwayne Jarrett. I don't know how they, you know, there's just so many different problems with that Lane Kiffin offense to have to deal with. I don't love, we saw Percy Harvin get loose a couple times. I imagine Reggie Bush could also against this Oklahoma defense. So it's more of a toss-up to me. I think I would probably give the big game coaching nod to Pete Carroll over Bob Stoops if we're looking at track record. So I'd say 70-30 probably USC, but it's very close, and I can understand why you would take Oklahoma because of the matchup.
All right, well, let's do this. Let's keep with 2005 USC.
Okay.
Because I think it's interesting now as we go to 2009, our final team that we're looking at on this show. 2009 would be Texas.
Mm-hmm.
We've already talked about this game and what happened in this game. Notably, Colt McCoy getting hurt, his arm going numb, then freshman Garrett Gilbert coming in and throwing four picks. Ultimately, Texas loses in the Rose Bowl to Alabama, 37-21. You and I debated the merits of their late comeback. They did make a run at it. Alabama pulled away late. Okay, but the headline here is Colt McCoy getting hurt. And prior to that, Texas was in a remarkable spot. 13-0.
Mm-hmm.
Couple close calls throughout the course of the year. Really good team. Colt McCoy, Jordan Shipley, that was the offense. Let's not kid ourselves.
Correct.
That was the offense in 2009 for the Texas Longhorns. That year, Jordan Shipley caught 116 balls for 1,485 yards and 13 touchdowns.
Right.
Colt McCoy threw 27 touchdowns. So not quite half of them, but pretty damn close to half of those touchdowns went to his boy. Roommate, Jordan Shipley, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Older brother of Jackson, older brother of Case.
This was an interesting spot here. It was a good defense to complement that two-man offense.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran into an Alabama team that was very loaded at the time. Very loaded at the time. This is a Greg McElroy offense. I know you love when I put him at the top. But we're talking about guys like Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson carrying the ball. We're talking about receivers like Julio Jones. Marquise Mays was on that team. A whole host of talent on defense, not the least of which was Rolando McClain, Mark Barron, Javier Arenas, Marcel Darius, as you mentioned. Mount Cody on that team. So there's a lot of talent on that Alabama side. It's no secret why they won that game. But what strikes you looking back at Texas in 09 and specifically as you try to compare them to some of the other teams that we've discussed here?
So the defense takes a step back the offense takes a step back. The defense actually gets better. Even though they lose guys up front, I think they lost Brian Arakpo from 2008. Sergio Kindle still there. Earl Thomas still there. The secondary is very good. And it was for a long time with Dwayne Aquina, who is just like the defensive back whisperer for Texas. So they lose a key playmaker on offense in Quan Cosby, who really helped to stretch the field. I think Colt McCoy set a record for completion percentage in 2008. It was like 76%. It was cartoonish. And so I think the shame is that the 2008 squad wasn't playing healthily against Alabama, not necessarily the 2009. A really impressive defense. Strange to see Texas without a running game. This is post Jamal Charles, and you know they just can't seem to get it going. I think it's Trey Newton is their leading rusher. But all things considered, they do survive some close calls in the Big 12. That includes the best modern Big 12 defense probably? In 2009's Nebraska, Ndamukong Suh, Bo Pelini, just madhouse of horrors. So they survive that game in the literal last seconds, and they make it to the BCS championship game. They hang around really all season long in the top two or three. The scares don't really drop them that much. They end up not losing to anybody until Alabama. And even then, with Garrett Gilbert going 15 of 40 and throwing the interceptions that he does, it's still a game late. So if we're saying USC could have won, if we're saying Oklahoma, maybe not often in a 100-game simulation, but they had enough, you know, if certain things break correctly, to beat Florida the way that that team came together, I think you have to say the 2009 Texas team, for all of its flaws, this is the year Nick Saban's Death Star of Alabama became operational.
Yeah.
What they were up front. 2008, correct. They were getting there, but they weren't there with the offensive skill positions like they were with Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson. And the depth of talent that they built on defense was starting to become pretty scary. So for Garrett Gilbert to pull that Texas team back, I'm going to say yes. They absolutely could have won, but because it was Garrett Gilbert, I'm going to nick them a few points and say, I'm not putting them up against probably many of the first place losers of the 4 years prior, but still, all things considered, this was a damn impressive Texas team. This is a Will Muschamp defense. This is an experienced offense that just didn't have, I guess, winter wonders. Once again, without Colt McCoy, without Quan Cosby, without Jamal Charles, guys that were just so good for them in the couple years leading up, they just couldn't hang. They couldn't run, even though it was extremely close late.
You're giving it a little too much credit.
Am I, though?
I'll come back to the previous argument we had on a different show. But,
right.
Like, this game was over early, and Alabama let Texas back into it.
Wait, no.
Garrett Gilbert was awful in this game.
He was awful, mostly. But he did make plays. You were saying Alabama, we're rerunning an argument we had a
yes.
couple weeks ago. Alabama tried very, very hard. Alabama's offense put the defense in a very bad spot by going three and out a lot in the second half. Alabama's defense was trying. Garrett Gilbert threw over this defense a little bit.
Nah.
Right?
Nah.
Hold on. You don't need to buy anything, Ty. It was 24-21 late. Right? That's irrefutable. It's 24-21, Texas ball with 3 minutes left. That's fact, right?
Okay.
So if we're going to say 10-point Florida over Oklahoma is within reason for Oklahoma, for OU, if we're going to say, you know, Ohio State against LSU, which was, you know, started out pretty well for Ohio State, I don't think they had much of a chance there. If we're going to say USC has a chance, close late, we have to talk about Garrett Gilbert completing passes against a good Alabama defense at times.
I don't know.
Just 24-21, 3 minutes left.
Okay. Well,
anyway, up against the rest of the teams. Does
yeah,
Texas
so
have a shot against who? Todd Beckman?
Let's do this. Let's assume that Colt McCoy plays.
I think that he started the game.
He started the game, but let's assume he doesn't get hurt.
Right.
And let's compare 09 Texas against, for starters, 05 USC.
Okay.
Where do you come down on that matchup?
I'm favoring SC. I don't think Texas has the receivers, like I mentioned, Oklahoma sort of did the previous year. I don't think outside of Jordan Shipley, they had the advantage going against the USC secondary. So I'll take USC.
I am intrigued by that Texas team and their offense against a really good defense in Ohio State, both years, really.
Colt McCoy, Texas, did play Ohio State in 2006, so I can't tell you what happened. It was a young Colt McCoy. It was a different team, but Ohio State beat them 24-7 in DKR.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
So we know the answer.
Yeah,
sort of. Different
sort of
year's team.
Yep.
But we know about Colt McCoy against Ohio State.
What about 08 Oklahoma?
08 Oklahoma against 2009 Texas.
Right.
So what's the difference between 08 Oklahoma and 2009 Oklahoma? I guess it's just Sam Brett.
Yeah, and I was going to say not much, really.
It's Sam Bradford injury.
Yeah.
In 2009. So Oklahoma falls to a very average offense in 09. But 08 Oklahoma against 09 Texas. If Texas is a little bit worse, and they were 10 points better than them the year before, they're a little bit better on defense, but a little bit worse on offense, or noticeably worse on offense, I think Oklahoma has the edge, but not by much. Because at least we have a good chunk of data about that matchup.
So what I think I'm hearing here is, if we are ranking, we've got 05 USC that we're going to take with us to the next show that we do talking about runners up, followed pretty closely by 08 Oklahoma, followed by 09 Texas, I would say followed by 06 Ohio State with Troy Smith, followed by 07 Ohio State with Todd Beckman.
Man. Oh, Beckman as the last place.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. That may have been the best defense of those five. Yeah, so it's basically, I mean, who would you take between 06 Ohio State and 07 Ohio State?
I'd probably go Troy Smith.
Troy Smith being the difference maker?
I think so. Yeah, I think he gave him more
defense
than
1 year older.
Todd Beckman?
I think so. But I think the best thing on the field between those two squads is the 07 defense. I'd probably end up taking that. I'd probably end up taking the defense. We saw what the offensive line of Ohio State would look like against a pretty nasty defensive line. I actually might take this very incestuous 07 Ohio State team over 06.
All right. Well, write in solidverbal@gmail.com. Yeah. Write in on our social media channels and let us know what your thoughts are on the matter here. It has been fun, actually, not just to go back through and rewatch old games. Now, obviously, we've got a lot of time to do that, but to do something like this where you actually get to look at it over a 5-year chunk. And we're going to do more of them. We're going to continue to do this over the next few episodes. To look at runners up and really talk about individual seasons and how things broke down, because you kind of forget as time goes on some of the interesting and cool things that happen over the span of a season. And, you know, where we're in this mode of talking about Alabama and Clemson so often, you forget about some of the other teams that have challenged. So I'm excited to keep going. I guess next time it'll be 2010, 11, 12, 13, and 14.
Correct.
Which means we get to talk about Notre Dame.
And
Oregon.
And Oregon. And I think we're gonna go pretty quickly through Oregon-Auburn because we've already sort of discussed that ad nauseum. But yeah, 2012 was a crazy year. We've got a Heisman winner in Marcus Mariota, 2014. So that'll be good.
All right. Well, again, solidverbal@gmail.com. Go on out to our website at solidverbal.com. And we would advise everybody to follow along with the show. You can sign up for our newsletter. We're going to start sending that out at some point in the very near future. Going out to Spotify. If you don't follow the show, make sure you do out there. Mm-hmm. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple or Google, whatever your podcasting app of choice may be. We will be with you all off season long for however long that may be. We're in this for the long haul, Dan.
Yeah, and if you have listened to any errors on this show as we combed through 5 years of seasons, it's solidverbal@gmail.com. Attention, Ty.
Yeah,
attention, great. Ty. No, I'm the one who I think my batting average is lower on this episode because I have the logorrhea, Ty. I liked going through a whole bunch of games and teams and players, but I had a ton of fun rewatching these old games and watching where they were not as strong, teams were not as strong as I thought they were, or a lot stronger, faster, more impressive than I remember them being, especially those Ohio State teams on defense. So, yeah, let us know what you think and give us your thoughts, I suppose, now that you know what we're doing here on the first place losers moving forward from the 2010 season through the 2019 season.
All right. Well,
that's it.
On that note, for that guy over there, way over there in Southern California, for myself, Ty Hildebrand over here in Eastern Pennsylvania, thank you so much for giving us some of your time. We hope you and yours are happy and safe and healthy. Keep washing those hands. We will talk to y'all in a week. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.